Good afternoon. My name is Maria, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Center for American Progress Action Fund call on state and climate policy. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Solner, you may begin your conference.
Thanks so much, Maria. I'd like to welcome everyone to our conference call this afternoon. Joining us today is Governor Bill Ritter of Colorado, State Senator Ellen Anderson of Minnesota, and Kate Gordon, Vice President for Energy Policy here at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I want to remind all participants that this call is recorded and that the audio will be available on the American Progress Action Fund website after the call. Today, we're releasing a new analysis by CAP Action analysts Rebecca Lefton and Richard Caperton that assess basically the 35 states, including Colorado and Minnesota, who have renewable energy standards in place. These RESs are essential in the sense that they have really shown a lot of leadership where, for example, the federal government has failed to act on major climate policy. We're thrilled to be joined by the state senator and the governor today to discuss the RES and also to look forward as we see that given the November elections, we may in fact have some of these RES agreements under threat. The analysis that Capture Action is being put, or excuse me, that we're putting out can be found on www.wonkroom.thinkprogress.org. If you have questions after the call, you can always reach me at 202-478-5322. That's 202-478-5322. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to Kate Gordon.
Thanks so much, Anna, and welcome everyone to the call. It's becoming increasingly clear that clean energy is just an emerging sector in the global economy. It's been estimated that up to $2.5 trillion in anticipated sales in this sector will happen by 2020. A number of countries are emerging as leaders in this space, China, Germany, Spain, others. Unfortunately, the United States is in danger of falling behind, even as the U.S. has made an international commitment to lowering our carbon emissions by 17% by 2020 and trying to become a player in this space. In the absence of U.S. federal action on climate and energy, the states are even more important than ever to move forward the United States toward a next-generation sustainable energy and economic future. In particular, the states have been leaders on the renewable energy standard, which is a policy that requires a certain percent of electricity from the utilities in a state to come from renewable sources. 35 states at the moment have some version of a renewable energy standard, and we've estimated that more than 2 million jobs could be created in these states in the next
ten to 20 years,
in the states that currently have renewable energy standards in place. That analysis, as Anna said, has just come out on American Progress Action Fund's website. However, there's a threat facing these renewable energy standards and a threat facing state leadership on climate action generally. In the upcoming election, several candidates have specifically spoken out against renewable energy standard in their state or have spoken out against global warming action and climate action generally. The states most at risk, and we've done this analysis in our reporting on the Wonk Room in various other publications, three of those states are Maryland, Ohio, and Illinois, in which Republican candidates have made clear that they do not support renewable energy policies that are currently in place and currently creating many jobs in the construction and manufacturing sectors. In Kansas, Minnesota, and Oklahoma, in addition, candidates have expressed extreme skepticism about global warming's existence and about any kind of policy to move the state forward or the region forward in climate and energy policy. To talk more about specific states that have emerged as leaders in the clean energy economy in the last few years, about their own leadership in making those states at the cutting edge, and about what those states might lose if existing policies are put at risk in the election, we have two very impressive speakers on the call with us today, Colorado Governor Bill Ritter and Minnesota State Senator Ellen Anderson. I'll turn to Governor Ritter first, who, you know, born in Colorado, interestingly, the first governor, I think, in 35 years to actually be born in Colorado, Governor Ritter has established the state as a true leader in the new energy economy. The state keeps boosting its renewable energy standard over and over because it keeps meeting its goals. And a number of high-level wind and solar companies have chosen to locate in Colorado due to its friendly policy environment and high-quality workforce. Governor Ritter, love to hear from you.
Thanks a lot, Kate, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the call. I'll just tell you a little bit about Colorado and renewable energy standards. We passed our first in 2004, before I was governor, at the ballot box. It was a 10% renewable energy standard for the investor-owned utilities. The rural electric associations were left out entirely, really more as a political question. When I came to the governor's office in 2007, in the first 100 days, we doubled that to 20% for the investor-owned utilities, 10% for the rural electric associations. And this past year, this past legislative session, we went to 30% for the investor-owned utility. The rural electric associations stay at 10%. And really, some of that has to do sort of the difficulty they are having in getting there. But the investor-owned utility, Xcel, was able to get to the 20% mark by 2015. We've done all of that with a 2% rate cap. But I think, to your point, and it's not just a renewable energy center. I've signed 57 different clean energy bills, but this is a very much an anchor piece of our clean energy agenda. What we've been able to do is demonstrate that with this renewable energy standard, and really with a commitment to clean energy, renewable energy, energy efficiency, you can create jobs doing it. We had a direct correlation. We were vying for Vestas wind towers, wind turbine manufacturing, and they were going to build their first manufacturing plant in North America. We were competing with several other states, and when we passed our renewable energy standard, Vestas made the decision within weeks to locate its first plant here. Now it's got all four of its American manufacturing plants in Colorado. Ultimately, that'll be 2,600 jobs, $1 billion of investment, but their suppliers are moving here as well, and so it's added jobs, and that's just one company. Right? That's just one company. We have a variety of really significant solar companies doing fantastic work with thin film photovoltaic. Some of those companies, the ideas were hatched in Colorado's laboratories. We have the best research and development quarter in America with a renewable energy laboratory and then three great research universities that are a part of it as well. And we can see job creation flowing from all that. So this ecosystem that we've created for renewable energy has been very significant. We attracted $465 million in venture capital between 06 and 08 for clean energy jobs. And we've just done a variety of things that I think over the long run will prove the kind of template that we can use as a nation. But as an important part of that, really a pillar of that, is our renewable energy standard that we passed, or we doubled in 2007 and then got it to 30% this past year.
Great. Thank you so much, Governor Ritter. That's fantastic. Coming from another part of the middle of the country and from Minnesota, Minnesota State Senator Ellen Anderson, who was elected to the Minnesota Senate in 1992 as a member of my favorite named party, the Democrat Farmer Labor Party, and has been in ever since, is the chair of the Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resource Budget Division, has been a leader on sustainable energy and clean water policy. And, of course, Minnesota has just emerged not only in the Midwest but nationally as one of the strongest states in clean energy policy with a very strong renewable energy standard and efficiency standard and some very forward-thinking utilities. So, State Senator Anderson, love to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction, and it's a pleasure to be on the call. I'm Ellen Anderson. I live in St. Paul, the capital of Minnesota, and it's fun to hear from Governor Ritter about Colorado, and I have to say that the drive to compete in this clean energy race is good. The competition is good. All the states are trying to lead, and some of us on this call are trying to buy for the front of the pack, and that's good for everyone in our country, I believe. We have what we consider to be one of the, if not the strongest, renewable energy standards in the country, and this took me quite a few years to pass. It took 7 years of pushing through the legislature, and it was signed into law in 2007, and it calls for, it'll end up with about 25% renewable energy by 2020. And then by 2025, we should be at about 28% renewable energy statewide. And one of the reasons that it's very strong is that about half of our electricity in our state is provided by Xcel Energy. So they have agreed to a higher standard, and they'll be at 30% by 2020. Another reason that the law is so strong is that we cover everyone, and we have very high standards for all, from the smallest utilities to the largest ones. And so all the other electric utilities will be at 25% by 2025. And so Xcel is leading the way, but all the other utilities are working hard to meet a very high standard as well. And we're already in Minnesota at about 1,800 megawatts of wind, and this has just been jumping quickly in our state. And Xcel is well ahead of the benchmark that they need to reach by 2010, which is they're supposed to be at 15%, and they're getting really close to 20% already renewables in their portfolio in Minnesota. So we're really moving ahead quickly. And on energy efficiency, we've done something similar. In 2007, we had a real historic energy year in our state capital. We passed the RES, the Renewable Energy Standard. We also passed a requirement for 1.5% energy savings for every electric and gas utility in our state as well. And so they all have to meet these energy savings requirements. But since the early 90s, we've actually required all of our electric and gas utilities to spend a portion of their revenue on conservation and efficiency. So now we refined that and made it a little bit tougher by having it result in a certain amount of actual energy savings. And if you combine those things, It's created so much economic activity in our state, so many jobs. The new predictions that I appreciate that we've seen for our renewable energy standard is some 26,000 jobs that will be created along the way between now and 2025 as we move through all that creation of renewable energy in our state. And in terms of energy efficiency, I just want to throw out one example because this one's near and dear to my heart. We have a company in the city of St. Paul called Rock 10, and it's a paper recycling plant. And they were in danger of shutting down a few years ago. They lost their cheap source of steam when we converted, or Xcel converted two of their oldest, dirtiest coal plants to natural gas, including one right in downtown St. Paul, which has really helped with our air quality right here in the city. But it took away their steam, and so they were in danger of shutting down, and they have 500 good-paying union jobs at that plant, and, that's real green jobs. And we did a partnership with state funding, which I helped with, and the City of St. Paul and Xcel Energy, and found that this company could save almost 25% of the energy that they were using with very short-term investments, with under two-year payback investments in energy efficiency. And they are now, one of the most efficient plants in their national company's fleet. And we saved those 500 jobs. And so it was a real win-win for the environment, for the jobs that were kept retained and were created along the way in making those energy improvements. Let me just say one other thing. We talk a lot about energy independence in our state. I'm sitting here actually at the University of Minnesota, which is also a fantastic research university, and we've invested a lot here in the latest, trying to find the latest great ideas for renewable energy in the area of biofuels as well as in electricity and natural gas, finding substitutes for all those things using our incredible natural resources that we have in Minnesota as an agricultural state, as a forested state, and a state that has a lot of wind and solar energy potential. We are really worried, as we're less than 2 weeks out from the election, about what happens going forward. It's a real toss-up depending on who's elected governor in our state. And we have a candidate for governor, Tom Emmer, who has already introduced legislation to repeal the Renewable Energy Standard last year. He tried to do that. He has said that if he's elected governor, he will back out of the Regional Climate Pact, which governors from six Midwestern states, led by our Governor Pawlenty in 2006 and 2007, they reached an agreement on a regional greenhouse gas accord, which could lead to the Midwest's first regional greenhouse gas program to cap and reduce greenhouse gases. He said he would get out of that. He's called climate science. Now, get this down, Al Gore's porn. That's what how he refers to climate science. So he's a big climate denier. So the race is between him, Tom Emmer, the Republican candidate, and former U.S. Senator Mark Dayton, who is a big supporter of investing in clean energy and clean energy jobs and retrofitting, starting with retrofitting all the public buildings in the state to save energy. So let me stop there. I probably talked too long and be happy to take any questions.
No, that's great, Senator. Thank you. It sounds like you both have a lot at stake in the upcoming election. I think we are going to go to questions. So back to Anna.
Maria, we're ready. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Edward Belker of Energy Guardian. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks for holding the call. This is for Governor Ritter. With you leaving office at the end of the year, would you like to come to Washington, be part of the administration to work on these issues? And either way, how would you rate the administration's effectiveness in both especially advancing a renewable energy standard? They seem to have put that on the back burner for a big climate bill, and now the whole thing looks like very shaky in the lame duck session. Could you address that?
Yeah, and could you give me your name again, please? Is it Ed?
Yeah, Ed Felker with Energy Guardian Newswire.
Okay, thanks. I just missed it. What I'll tell you is I have a great passion for what we've been able to achieve and what I think we need to do as a country and moving a clean energy agenda. That's been my passion, and I hope at some level, after I'm no longer the governor of Colorado, to be able to continue to work on that. But there are a lot of different disciplines where I think I'm able to do that, and so I have no sense about where I'll be. Presently, I have no sense about where I'll be. I'll just tell you that's my real hope, is to be able to continue to advance this. As it relates to your second question regarding the administration's and their work on energy issues, I think it is important to remember that a significant part of the Recovery Act included a variety of things that have helped us continue to promote an energy agenda, even in the worst downturn since the Great Depression. We've seen more job growth in this arena than in any other single arena, so that's positive, and much of that job growth has come from the administration's attack that they took on Recovery Act dollars being spent on clean energy. We've had a variety of companies that have received different kinds of loan guarantee money. We certainly have the significant weatherization money, far more significant weatherization money than we were spending as a state prior to the Recovery Act. And we've got a variety of ways of counting jobs saved or created as a result of that. So there have been many things that they've done to promote this agenda, and done those in the context of, as I say, the worst recession since the Great Depression, and having two other very significant priorities that the president and the administration spent a great deal of political capital. Passing the Recovery Act, my perspective as a governor is that was necessary. I mean, we were in financial free fall. Many of the states received a lifeline, and without which I don't know what they would have done or might have done, but that was important. And then passing health care was important. I think it was always the president's intent to pass a health care bill first, and I think he spent a great deal of political capital. So when it came time to deal with energy legislation, I think they looked at it and said this is going to be better dealt with at a time where we know what the makeup is of the Senate and the House. And we hear different Republican senators who are now talking about a low carbon standard, other senators who have decided just in the past couple of weeks that they may, in fact, support a renewable energy standard. So I think there will be movement on it. I certainly know that the president would have liked to have done that in 2010. And so I believe that 2011 will be the year for energy legislation. And I, for my part, seriously hope that it is because the rest of the world continues to wait. And as much as we are doing as states, national leadership is also required from a global perspective. Thanks for the question, Ed.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Patrick Malone of Pueblo Chieftain. Please state your question.
This question is for Governor Ritter. This is Patrick Malone with the Pueblo Chieftain. The first question would be, how likely is it that the renewable energy standard could be undone if the balance of power changes in the legislature or if we land a conservative governor? Second being, does that make this sort of a campaign call to vote Democratic on your part?
Well, Patrick, there's no doubt who I'm supporting in this race, the governor's race, and certainly out working for House Democrats, Senate Democrats. I can tell you the things that we've achieved in the clean energy space and in our clean energy agenda we achieved because I had a vision about where we could take this state and had supporters and really partners in the legislature and in a majority in the legislature, Dems on both sides. We had Democrats who voted against us on some parts of our clean energy agenda, but by and large, we wouldn't have been able to achieve what we had without the majorities in both houses. And I would say, you know, a governor is not going to, if a governor doesn't support a renewable energy standard, they're not going to be able to undo it because there's currently not legislative support. If the majority were to shift in both houses and the governor, if the governor were a conservative, and we have two different gubernatorial candidates, both Mays and Tancredo, who at various times have talked about how they would unwind this energy agenda and seem to have, I think, very little sympathy or very little sense about the importance of a renewable energy standard. What I think would happen if they began to try and do that, and let's say they have support in the legislature because the House and the Senate both turn, the business community would be up in arms because we've been able to demonstrate job growth that's directly correlated. These guys may say one thing on the campaign trail, but they would be absolutely foolish and I think taken to task by some of their own allies in the business community who understand that we have been able to create significant numbers of jobs as a result of our clean energy agenda. This is the way America needs to go. You know, we can't go back to a day where we were not thinking about how we should produce and consume energy differently on behalf of future generations. And I don't think even the most conservative, you know, Tancredo or Mays could pull off that kind of magic act because of how successful our energy agenda has been and how successful the linkage is to economic development.
Our next question comes from the line of John Hiss of grist.org. Please state your question.
Hey, this is John Hiskus at Grist. Thank you to all for holding the call. A question to both the governor and the senator. I'd like to know what clean tech companies in your states are asking for, both what kind of policy are they asking for, mainly for stronger yet RES standards or other things, or just defending what you have now, and also what kind of leadership they'd like from the state.
So, Senator, you want to go first?
Sure. Well, thank you. That's a great question. Thank you, Governor. I think what they're looking for is the same thing everywhere. They're looking for stability and predictability in policy. So that's kind of a number one thing. And that's, they're looking for us not to be making these issues political footballs because they want to invest. And they need to know that there's a reliable long-term market for renewable energy and for clean tech and for all the component companies that are involved in that process. That's why we have renewable energy standards in place, to drive the market and to have a reliable long-term bar out there that we set, a high bar that we set that companies can rely on so that that will drive their investment. So having a national standard and having a national climate policy would absolutely support that. And so there's a lot of progressive companies that understand that having and are asking for a climate policy. And if it doesn't, you know, we're hopeful, as the governor said, that Congress will move forward with the White House over the next year and take action. Whether or not that happens, the states will be moving ahead, and they will certainly be strengthening their regional commitments to capping carbon, and that will help these companies to be leaders in a global economy. In Minnesota, we passed an angel investment tax credit and some other kinds of tax incentives to help in the investment of in clean tech industries and other cutting-edge industries like biotechnology that are our strength. So those are just a couple of examples for Minnesota.
So thanks, Senator. And I think, you know, we're in some respects like Minnesota. Renewable energy companies, the clean energy companies, have, you know, looked for some tax credits, some level of incentives to invest. But, you know, it's interesting. They also care about a fairly broad array of things that you might not necessarily associate with an industry. One, they want to ensure we have an educated workforce, mm-hmm. and it's a workforce that can actually, you know, that they can actually rely upon. We put in place in our community college system across the state a green certificate, basically allowing people to be certified with associate's degrees or even less, but certified after having taken classes that would allow the renewable energy industry to say, well, this person, you know, knows how to install wind. We have a couple of small private colleges that are doing that as well. We have an Ecotech Institute that moved here with a two- and a four-year program, and that's all about certification on the clean energy side. The renewable energy companies as well are, I think, asking us for the development of a transmission policy. We have a pretty good policies statewide. We allowed our investor-owned utilities to accelerate their cost recovery on the build-out of transmission for renewables. We allowed rural electric associations to bond against future income, something they hadn't been able to do. But we're looking at, you know, regional transmission grids, and also looking at it from the national perspective. What can we do as one state to be part of the national conversation to have a more significant build-out? They're looking for ways to finance, and so we passed two different laws or a set of laws that allow a couple of different things. One allows third-party finance, third-party building out of you know, renewable energy systems. So you can come in and you can install solar on a house and own that. That the homeowner doesn't own it. They're leasing it. These companies that are doing it can show that the lease payment is actually less than the amount that the couple's saving in energy costs. And so that's a real positive. We also had a thing called PACE funding that allowed residents to voluntarily increase their tax assessments over, let's say, a 15-year period, and they would amortize the upfront cost of installing a renewable system in their home. That's been clouded somewhat by the FHA and whether that, you know, the mortgage takes a second position to that voluntary tax increase is a question that's left on the table. And so that's slowed down a little bit, but that's what renewables want. They want, you know, a way for us to assist with financing mechanisms to allow everybody to participate in this and get what we call a lot more distributed generation.
Well, and if I'm just going to jump back in for 1 second, Senator Anderson, I thank you to the governor for that. All rings very true in Minnesota as well, and I would add the production tax credit is an issue that keeps coming up for our wind industry, that it keeps stopping and starting, and we need, again, a long-term policy that they can count on to help with the financing of their wind projects.
This is Kate Gordon from American Progress Action Fund. Just wanted to jump in and say that from our perspective, we talked to companies all over the country and the world about investment in the United States and in particular states on clean energy, and are hear exactly what both the senator and the congressman just said. And we've really kind of put those into three categories. These guys need to see a market for their products, and that's the kind of thing created by a renewable energy standard or a price on carbon. They need to see financing to be able to research, develop, deploy, produce those products. And they need the infrastructure to move the products to market, including the human capital infrastructure of a workforce. So that's exactly what we've heard, and it's good to hear that it that bears out across the states.
Next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Kathy Cash of Flat. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I was interested in comments from both the governor and the senator in regard to a federal policy on climate change or federal RES that may preempt states. You know, there's been a lot of debate on that on Capitol Hill, and a lot of folks who are in favor, a lot of members who are in favor of a federal RES or a federal price on carbon want that to be, you know, the law of the land. They talk about concerns about patchwork of state programs as well. So do you see this as problematic for the 35 states who've come so far in their own renewable electricity standards or renewable energy standards and forming regional carbon markets? Is this would this be a problem?
Well, I'll go first if I can, Senator. You know, for our purposes, we have a climate action plan. We have the goals that are stated around it, a 20% reduction by 2020. Those are, you know, if you look at the renewable energy standards that the states have, many of them are fairly close. We're at 30%, but for our investor-owned utility, also, which happens to be Xcel, I should mention, Senator, and they have been a great partner for us as a utility in building out a clean energy agenda, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. But, you know, there's a lot of different places in federal legislation where it operates not as a preemption on the upside, but only on the downside, though, so that it requires at least a minimum level. And if you want to go beyond that, you're allowed to. And so when I talk about a national renewable energy standard, I've testified before the United States Senate in favor of it. It's with the presumption that they would put in place a minimum standard that states would, you know, have to meet, that we'd have to meet as a country, but not preclude something above that. And I believe it's the working and the thinking of the Congress and of the Senate that that's how a renewable energy standard would ultimately work. I am in favor of a national climate action plan. I think you have to tie the two together. That's what I've said, is that for too long we've had energy policy that wasn't reckoning the right kind of climate policy for us as a nation and as, you know, as a superpower nation, that we really have to have a sense about, you know, global climate issues, and therefore have a climate policy that's married to our energy policy. And again, you can do that in a way that is not problematic for states who want to set, you know, perhaps a different pace at the front of the pack.
And this is Senator Anderson. I would just really second what the governor said. I think all states would agree pretty much that we want the Congress to set a strong floor and let those states that have advantages and the interest and the passion to move forward and go further faster in clean energy go further and not undercut the great work that we've done in different states in renewable energy. I know our senators Klobuchar and Franken are working on trying to get a renewable energy standard that looks like Minnesota's, which is a very strong standard, but if that doesn't happen, we definitely don't want to undercut what we've done. And I mentioned before the idea of energy independence. We're a very energy dependent state. We don't have any coal, gas, oil, uranium in our state. We import all of that, but we have the capacity to become energy exporters in this clean energy economy, and that's what we intend to do if we move, you know, as we move forward. And we wouldn't want Washington to stand in the way of that, but to support that. I also agree with the governor that ideally we have national climate policy, and that leads to global climate policy, and that's critically important. And if there's a gap, the states will lead as they always have. But ideally, we should have a uniform policy on climate that is a high standard around the country and the world.
Maria, we have time for one last question.
Okay. Our next question will come from the line of Dean Scott from Reporter BNA News. Please state your question.
Hi. Thanks for doing this, guys. My question is both for the state senator and for the governor, I guess. Following up on Kathy Cash's question, I'm wondering, how should a federal standard be written to assure it does not only undercut existing state standards, but would actually support what your states are doing? In other words, take into account some of the action that you're doing or provide some incentives for states that have already acted.
Want to go ahead, Senator?
Sure. Well, I think, again, you know, we need to number one, make sure that they don't prevent us from having higher standards, especially in areas of strength. I mean, for us, we have a lot of wind. We have a lot of other resources potentially in agriculture and forestry producing biomass. And so they need to have the ability of states to use the resources that they have in their state to produce renewable energy, to excel in those areas. And so there has to be some flexibility there so states can move ahead in their different areas. But set a strong bar for the minimum standard. I guess, yeah, I'd leave it at that.
I would add to that, and thank you, Senator. I don't know that I'll get another chance. It was a pleasure to be on the call with you, and keep up
as
the great work in Minnesota.
Well.
And
thank
you're
you.
Right. It's great to have a friendly competition, but it's an important competition to, you know, to try and advance this agenda. So I would add that the federal government, you know, the ways they could help us are very much in line with some of the things that happened in the Recovery Act. We look at the kind of loan guarantee money. And remember, this is loan guarantee money. It's not necessarily money that flows out the door and doesn't come back. It's just a backup in case there's some kind of a problem with the company that, you know, is being invested in. And so Bound Solar, a thin film photovoltaic company that believes it can get to grid parity in the next 4 or 5 years, already had received about $150 million in venture capital money when the market turned down. They were having difficulty raising money for a second phase, a second round, so they could expand. Ultimately, they do. They get the $400 million, but it's because they have a loan guarantee from the federal government, and that allows them to create really hundreds of more jobs. And as a result of that, you know, they're putting people to work, including research and development people, because they're moving on this issue about grid parity. But they're manufacturing in a very serious way. Ascent Solar is another great example. UQM Technologies making a jet propulsion system. It's a clean energy system for a fully electric car that's being manufactured in California, or it's being marketed in California. I think the rest of manufacturing actually may be in China. But that's what, you know, we're doing here in Colorado, is looking at all the different ways you can create jobs as a result of that, and make this tie from clean energy back to economic development, so that this thing does stay with us and people don't come in and try and take the agenda backwards.
Just one quick additional note on the federal government rewarding states. We have seen that the states have become leaders on this, really have been able to be in a much better position to capture federal dollars, in particular around programs such as the ERIC, the Energy Regional Innovation Cluster program, that just sent out $125 million from a number of agencies. That program was for building energy efficiency technology and was given to the place in the country that had the best set of industries working together to do research, development, production, deployment on building energy efficiency, in that case, Penn State. But there are some great ways the federal government can really prioritize those states that have been leaders. But again, if these states aren't able to be leaders, then there's not only not going to be state money flowing and state jobs being created, there's not going to be federal money flowing to those states either.
You know, one last word, if I may. This is Ellen again, Ellen Anderson again from Minnesota. We haven't mentioned in great detail the need for the national, and I know the governor mentioned the need for that grid infrastructure, but the smart grid and making, you know, a 21st century electric grid across the country. This is something President Obama has talked about. He talked about a lot during the campaign. You know, just like we built the interstate highway system and it connected our country, and we need to do the same thing with the electricity grid, which looks much the same as it did when Thomas Edison started it all. And we need to modernize that. And that's something where the federal government could really help support the states and help to allow, you know, states that have different kinds of energy capacities to really work successfully together and move forward in the clean energy economy. Thank you all so much. It was a pleasure to be part of the call.
I would just add to the Senator, this is Governor Ritter again. Again, the best technology in the world on smart grid is really in America. There's technology in other parts of the world, but we've done a variety of really important things in this country to develop smart grid, and to the extent we could get a fully integrated transmission system that takes advantage of this technology, the energy efficiency would be very significant if you made it clean energy and tied it to a climate policy. And I know this is a lot. There's a lot of very important work, but I think this is our moment as a country to do this and demonstrate global leadership, and I hope that Congress responds in kind the next year. So thank you very much for being on the call. It was great.
Thanks so much, Governor, and thank you again, Senator Anderson, and
thank you all,
Gordon. Again, if you need to reach anyone here at CAP Action, my number is 202-478-5322. That's 202-478-5322. You can find the analysis that we put out earlier today on wonkroom.thinkprogress.org. Again, that's wonkroom.thinkprogress.org. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.